Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, we're going to talk with Lauren Windsor here in just a second, but it's that time at the beginning of the month when we lose a whole bunch of Patreon subscribers to declines and cancellations. So your support right now is super duper important to make up for all of that. So if you're into it, I urge you to go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow and sign up for our $10 per month level to get the Shadow Docket bonus show and our Friday after party shows with me and Kimberly Johnson. In other words, if you choose to support the show for just $10 per month, you're going to get access to the super secret Shadow Docket shows every Tuesday and Thursday on the Patreon page, plus the exclusive Friday After Party podcast with me and Kimberly. So don't miss out. Go to BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Choose the After Party and Shadow Docket level. Enter your information and you're all set. Thanks so much for supporting this podcast. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Oh, yes. I hate this. It is revolting.
More?
Please.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, November 1, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 1015 of the Biden-Harris administration, 369 days into the 24th presidential election. You can find me on Threads and Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, Spoutable Bob Seska, and the Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. Right off the bat, I am so glad Lauren Windsor is on our side and not the other side. She's one of these fearless activists and consultants who puts her own ass on the line to push back against the MAGA movement. Among many other things, Lauren is famous for her sting videos where she acts like a Trump supporter and gets people like John Eastman to blab all kinds of incriminating things. You may have heard about Lauren on The Rachel Maddow Show or Keith Olbermann's Countdown podcast, not to mention her appearance on something called Start Me Up with Kimberly Johnson. Who's that? She's working with volunteerblue.org. She's the centerpiece of the YouTube channel called The Undercurrent, and she's responsible for Project Veritas Exposed. We're going to talk about that today. Links in the description, of course, to support all of those websites and places. Meantime, don't forget to support this podcast by subscribing to us on Patreon, BobSeskaShow.com. Okay, here's me talking with the great Lauren Windsor.
More fun, more music, The Bob Seska Show.
I met a girl when I was just 17. She took me out for a dance once.
You know what? Just to reveal to everybody, Lauren right now is in an airport, right? You're in the airport?
I am. I just got to Newark.
Well, thank you so much for making time for me, because when I'm in an airport, all I can think about is getting the hell out of the airport as quickly as I can.
I feel you.
So
it's worth it though.
Right. So you flew across country. You're back here on the East Coast. Are you originally from the East Coast or is this just a business trip?
So I'm from the South. I split my time between DC and California. I need to be in DC for work, doing national politics, but I'm definitely a California girl. I'm in town for a conference.
What are you doing with Heather Booth right now? Because Kimberly came running into the room the other day. She's like, okay, you got to talk to Lauren Windsor because she's doing this thing with Heather Booth. And I said, you know what? I've been wanting to talk with Lauren for a long time now anyway. So maybe this will be a good excuse to bring her on. So what's going on with Heather right now?
Well, so Heather is working with a coalition. We're working with this coalition of 15 different groups in Volunteer Blue. And mm-hmm. so it's an effort to really mobilize voters, but through volunteerism to take part in driving people to the polls for Ohio and Virginia, particularly around abortion, because, you know, abortion is on the ballot in both of those states, really. The hub, it's called volunteerblue.org, and folks can connect through any of the partner organizations to find, you know, an activity that speaks to them.
Gotcha. Volunteerblue.org. I'll put a link in the description under this episode, bobsuska.com, also on the Patreon page. So, Lauren, you mentioned Virginia. And before we get into the really fun stuff that you do, I want to talk about the upcoming election, because there's a lot riding on what happens in Virginia, right?
Yes. And we had a preview of that in 2021, actually, before Youngkin was elected. So I don't know if you recall that I had gone undercover with Youngkin, Glenn Youngkin, on the topic of abortion. And he said that he couldn't be public about his views because it wouldn't help him to win independent voters. And, it, you know, it's widely seen. It became fodder, you know, for the most, I think, played ads that cycle. But, you know, within that video, he says, you know, we can start going on. He's like, I can't do much, you know, with just the governorship. But if I have the House and the Senate, then we can really go on the offense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, definitely take Glenn Youngkin at his word on that, because if they win the Virginia Senate, they will go on the offense on abortion.
So this framing of Glenn Youngkin as being some sort of sane Republican, that's really just a facade, isn't it? Especially based on what you discovered through your undercover operation, that it's more about Glenn Youngkin hiding all of the ugly things that he believes in. Is that sort of your read on this, that he's kind of trying to position himself as more sane than he actually is?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, he's going to speak to the moderates in the northern part of the state, right? Mm-hmm. So his image is very carefully calculated to appear to be a sane Republican. But, you know, whether or not it's him or his deputy governor, Winsome Sears, like Winsome is pretty right wing. She's even more openly conservative than he is. And I would take them all at their word.
Yeah.
They're not hiding it much. You know, you just need to Google it, dive in even just a little bit, and you'll discover that they are pretty, I hate to be, hyperbolic, but there is a real sense of like Christo fascism that you get with like Winston Sears and Glenn Youngkin. So, you know, but these are people who enabled Trump. You know, they just didn't want to campaign with him because they knew that it wouldn't go over. It wouldn't sell in Northern Virginia.
Such cowards. Not having the courage of their convictions, even as extreme as those convictions might be. But do you think they're going to get what they want in this election? Do you think that they're going to end up with a trifecta?
I think that that is not going to happen. And hopefully your listeners will help be a part of that and volunteer to turn out voters in Virginia.
Yep.
But, you know, I think that one of the most underestimated stories of each successive election mm-hmm. since the overturning of Roe v. Wade with the Dobbs decision is just how strong you know the anger is over this you know taking away of reproductive rights, and I think that women are going to show up at the polls in force. And I don't think that they're going to be able to do that in Virginia, but, you know, people have to not be complacent, you know.
Yeah.
I think there was a sense in 2021. I know I talked to a lot of people that thought, oh, Youngkin definitely can't win given, you know, your video with how he really feels about abortion. But, you know, people were complacent about it and didn't really think that, I guess, you know, that Dobbs was coming, that overturning Roe was coming. But now we're there. So I hope that people take that seriously.
You know, Lauren, one of the things that I'm constantly thinking about is the disconnect between the political discourse in social media versus what's actually happening on the ground, things that you're doing with your activism and the volunteerism that's happening out there. It's really encouraging. And I think if we spent more time checking out what was actually happening out in the world, not on social media, we'd be a little bit more optimistic about things. Does that make sense?
I do think that we tend to be much more nervous and jittery as Democrats. And when you're in, I think, beltway bubbles where, you know, the pundit class, like the mainstream sort of pundit class is really sort of more skewed as like centrist or like right leaning, you know, I think that people buy into that a little bit too much. And I'm not saying that, you know, the electorate skews progressive, but I think that, you know, for instance, you know, what about the red wave that never materialized last year?
Yeah,
there's a great data point right there. It didn't materialize because women were, you know, freaking pissed off and continue to be pissed off. And, you know, I think it's going to continue to drive that election. So I think that's one really positive data point. But, you know, when you talk about undercurrents of things that we don't really see or that don't really get talked about, it also happens on the negative side. So I remember in 2021, I went to a lot of these events and there was a real focus on schools and critical race theory. Yeah. And even though we've talked about that, people weren't really talking about it as being like a driver in the election. And in 2021, like Glenn Youngkin's focus on schools and parents' rights and CRT was really like, I think, a game changer for him that enabled him to you know, ride the election into the governor's mansion. But, you know, Democrats need to have an answer for that. We need to be addressing parents' rights. We need to, and it's not, you know, talking about some, you know, BS right-wing conspiracy, like, you know, the Chris Rufo CRT stuff. It's, you know, addressing it for the average voter who isn't like that engaged and doesn't have like that much knowledge of what's going on with it. And then pivoting to like, hey, maybe what we should really talk is about how the right wing is systematically trying to defund our public schools. I don't know if you saw the governor's debate between Cameron and Beshear, where Beshear just like dismantled him on public schools.
That's
and it
great.
Was, oh my God, it was breathtaking. It was, it was, God, it's so enjoyable just to see a Democrat stand up and say, like, unequivocally, I support public schools, and ask him, you know, about his support for vouchers, because that's what he wants to do, is defund public schools.
And it's kind of amazing, Lauren, and you're a part of this. I think the notion of, well, the Democrats don't know how to do messaging, I think that's an old, outdated observation. I think the Democratic messaging machine is more robust now than it's ever been. You're seeing, like, for example, the Biden HQ Twitter account. I mean, that alone is doing an amazing job at delivering a solid message in support of Joe Biden and his reelection campaign, even going so far as to appearing on Truth Social and having an account over there, which is incredible. So do you feel as though this is an improved situation as far as messaging goes?
I do. And I think, though, that's really something that speaks to Joe Biden's leadership, because, you know, Ron Klain had tremendous relationships with progressive leaders. And, you know, I don't know to what degree folks remember, like, you know, during the Obama administration, I wouldn't say that his engagement with the progressive community was as robust as Biden's. I think that Biden goes out of his way to engage progressive leaders, and Ron Klain was really key to that in the first few years. Obviously, there's a new chief of staff in the last year, Jeff Zients, and it remains to be seen whether or not he will like have the same, I think, deftness with progressives as Ron Klain did. But, you know, I think it speaks to Joe Biden that he learned from, I think, missteps of the Obama years.
Are you at all concerned about Dean Phillips and Steve Schmidt and this primary challenge?
I'm not at all. I think it's I think it's silly. is he going to gain traction? No. But he clearly wants attention for himself. So whoever wants to bankroll it, like, you know, maybe it's already come out. Maybe we'll find out. Like, Harlan Crow, is there Harlan Crow money going into the Dean Phillips campaign?
Oh, yeah.
He seems to be funding everybody else, right? He funded Cornel West and RFK, I want to say.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to...
Is Harlan Crow funding him? Is Harlan Crow funding Dean Phillips?
I think so. I think some Harlan Crow money went into that campaign already. I want to say, yeah, there was some news about that yesterday or maybe the day before. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's quite obvious. I guess the question is, though, whether or not this is going to end up doing any damage to Joe Biden, any appreciable damage. I mean, I lean toward the notion that any primary challenge to an incumbent president is going to do some damage. But where do you land on that idea?
I think, you know, just traveling around the country, I do hear a lot of people dissatisfied with the choices. You know, people are questioning, like, I don't want to see another Biden-Trump matchup. But, you know, Biden has delivered a lot and a lot for progressives and has continually sought to take the temperature down in terms of polarization. You know, I think that people need to realize that, you know, any challenge to this incumbent president is, you know, weakening the ticket. But, you know, to the degree that that needs to be played out in some way, there is an opportunity for Joe Biden to emerge from this stronger by, you know, I think I wouldn't say he needs to engage Dean Phillips because, I mean, that would just be, you know, uplifting his candidacy. But in so far as they can dismantle any of his arguments in a very public way and just reinforce with people, like, every single criticism that Dean Phillips has lodged at me, here's my response, and, like, shut it down. I think if you just, like, the problem I see on our side a lot is, and this goes back to the CRT stuff in Virginia too, and the problem with the CRT stuff nationally is we often find ourselves in a posture of like, we don't need to, you know, dignify that with a response. And so rather than responding and like shutting it down and pivoting to what we should really be talking about, which is like exactly what you saw with Beshear versus Cameron in Kentucky, which was just so, you know, like a masterclass, right?
Yeah.
When you leave a void like that in a conversation, to the average voter, you know, the right wing then dominates and wins and Democrats look weak. Like, well, you don't have an answer for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Like, if you're not responding to it, it must be true. And then it like sort of, I really think, encourages like the worst sort of speculation and sort of like buy into whatever right wing fever dream is like of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than like avoidance and like, you know, leaving voids out there, I think that, you know, to the degree that Democrats can address these concerns and pivot to what we should like, you know, just fully dismantle the argument, like, no, unless someone's truly crazy, like, you should engage with people who are, like, raising these concerns in a good faith manner. You know, we need to be doing the hard work of combating disinformation.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's an opportunity, too, to illustrate strong leadership. We have the advantage of the truth behind us. And if we can articulate the truth in a way that's hard-hitting and comes from a place of strength, as opposed to Republicans who pretend to be strong and their entire argument is based on lies and disinformation and nonsense. It's sort of something that I think Gavin Newsom is doing quite a bit of these days and is extraordinarily effective at. And he's not afraid. And the same with Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Secretary Pete, where he's going on Fox News quite a bit and sticking it to them on their own airwaves, so to speak. So that's the kind of thing we need more of, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm really encouraged by the Democratic bench. I mean, you know, beyond Pete, who's obviously not a governor, we have like a great bench of governors, not just Gavin, but, you know, Gretchen Whitmer, Josh Shapiro, to me, is like super impressive. You know, what he was able to do showing government working, you know, with getting the freeway collapse fixed in record time, like, you know, I'm not as familiar with what Wes Moore has done so far, but, you know, I think that we have a crop of leaders across the country that are doing really, really good things for the party in ways that I think it set a good example for voters as to like new leadership.
Okay, we'll take a short break, back with more Lauren Windsor right after these words.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska. All-time favorites all day long.
What inspired you to start shooting undercover videos?
So I let me give you a little bit of context to that. So I launched my web show, The Undercurrent. Really got activated into politics through Occupy. So it was an Occupy activist out in LA, and I started filming protests, and then I pitched the Young Turks and then launched a web show called The Undercurrent with them, which I'm still producing today. And it was mainly, you know, like field reporting, just, you know, show up at events and get interviews. In the political world, we call it bird dogging, where, you know, you have somebody you want to talk to. And, you know, it not in the activist-y way where you're like going up and confronting them, but it's more of, you know, just walking up and, you know, in a press fashion and asking them whatever question, you know, it is that you came to ask them about. But, I was doing that for a long time. That was really the focus of my reporting. And I really saved like the undercover stuff for difficult to get in venues. So like the Koch brothers retreats, the ALEC conferences. So in 2014, I'd been in DC for a year, and I had a source who gave me several hours of audio from a Koch brothers retreat. And I was there on site when it happened. And so it was undercover, for that particular project. But I continued on with that, that sort of, you know, mostly bird dogging, you know, minimal undercover mix until about 2020. And our office had been infiltrated by James O'Keefe in 2016. And he had been doing, obviously, the undercover stuff in our office. And yeah. I've had people ask me, like, oh, well, you must have started doing undercover videos because of James O'Keefe. And it's like, actually, no. I mean, I pivoted to doing more of that in 2020 once I realized that, like, hey, I need to expose these election deniers who are hell-bent on, you know, overturning our elections. You know, people aren't generally going to, you know, tell you with a microphone in their face that what their plans are to overturn the election. Yeah. So, to me, I was on the ground for 6 weeks in Georgia for the two Senate runoffs and had broken. This was the first reporting that there was going to be a challenge to the Electoral College on the Senate side. Up until that point, this was like the DC sort of mentality of like, oh, that's not a serious thing. The Electoral Challenge is not going to happen. That's just like some harebrained thing that's going on in the House with the Freedom Caucus. You know, it's led by Mo Brooks, but, you know, nothing can happen without a challenge in the Senate. And there's not going to be any senator who's going to do that. Well, I was out of, you know, on the campaign trail with the various surrogates for Loeffler, Perdue, and Tuberville was out there. Then Senator-elect Tuberville was out there with then Congressman-elect Madison Cawthorn. And they were both talking. And this is in the middle of December, mind you, like.
Of 2020. Like, yeah.
Of 2020. Yeah. So well after the election. And they're telling people at this event to, you know, stay strong, keep fighting for Donald Trump. We still have a chance to win this. And I'm just like, wow, okay.
Delusional.
And Madison even said, he was like, you know, keep the faith and keep fighting because we still have, you know, cards to play, or, you know, we still have tricks up our sleeve. And so when I, as Tuberville is walking out, I walk up to him and I'm like, Senator Tuberville, Madison said y'all still have tricks up your sleeve. What are y'all going to do to fight for President Trump? And he was like, ma'am, you seen what they're doing over in the House. We're going to have to do that in the Senate too. And, you know, I asked Madison about it and he said, you know, we're going to do this challenge to the Electoral College. It's a Hail Mary pass, but I think it might work. And so, to me, going undercover just became really key to, you know, exposing more of what was really going on. And, you know, those stories helped to really train the focus onto Georgia. I mean, it was already trained there, you know, the crucible of everything going on politically because of those two Senate races. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Donald Trump tweeted out my stories. Like, I asked David Perdue if he would also challenge the Electoral College. And he said, yes, ma'am, I am. Even though that wasn't technically possible at the time. And so Trump tweeted out both of those things and he became like, he even thanked me by name. He tweeted out the wow. David Perdue story. And he was like, that's because David is a true patriot. Thank you, Lauren, for your hard work.
No clue. They no clue what you were doing. They just tweeted it out and there it is. Oh my God.
But so, I mean, and that was actually the precursor to Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz announcing their own objections to the Electoral College, because, like, you know, I get Tuberville, I get Perdue, Trump tweets out both of those videos of them talking about challenging the Electoral College. And then the following week, it's Hawley and Cruz. And so it just, like, snowballed from there. But, you know, I think that really honing in on that threat was key to, Democrats winning Georgia. I think at the end of the day, Georgians didn't want to vote for folks who were okay with their elections being overturned.
What was the development of this character that you play? Was it sort of an organic thing that you thought of on the spot, or did it kind of was it ruminating in your head for a while? Like, okay, how do I get them to believe that I'm one of their own people? Is that where the character came from? Or as I said, was it more spontaneous?
I'm from the South. And so I've grown up with, you know, being a liberal in a very red state. You know, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have family members who are Trumpers. I may be a liberal, but, you know, I don't present as like a granola sort of, lefty activist type. You know, I can come across as very, I can come across as Republican, just physically, like, from the outward appearances. So, it's just a matter of tweaking without giving away the secret sauce.
Sure.
Just tweaking, really leaning into the whole image of like a Southern white girl Republican.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're extraordinarily good at it, and it's obviously very, very effective if they're all buying into it. So I want to go back, though, to Project Veritas and James O'Keefe. Did they go after you first, or did you go after them and then they retaliated? How did this all develop?
They went after us. And what it was it wasn't so much our firm, but it was our firm was a proxy for the Clinton campaign and the DNC. So in our office, so I am a political consultant. I'm a partner in a firm called Democracy Partners. One of our co-founders is named Bob Creamer.
Oh, yeah, I know
Bob,
him.
So Bob is a great guy, like family to me, like a father figure. He mentored me, like took me under his wing, really brought me into the world of progressive politics in D.C. back when I was an Occupy activist in L.A. who had just launched this, web show with the Young Turks. So Bob to me, he's a partner, but he's family. And, they had had some, they're in, I guess, they didn't, think, let's go after Bob Creamer. They had been doing some like fishing expeditions in Wisconsin. And I guess in conversations with this guy that had been a subcontractor for Bob on a project, this guy's name was Scott Vogel. Through some conversations in a bar with him, we're saying like, we're political consultants and we have a donor who's interested in funding GOTV operations. Mm-hmm. And so Scott's like, I should hook you up with, Bob Creamer, like that would, he's thinking he's doing Bob a solid, bringing him donor money for GOTV stuff. And, Bob starts talking to, and mind you, like this undercover operation from Project Veritas, they had like 8 different people, across the country over the course of like over 6 months.
Jesus.
We're not talking about, some fly-by-night operation. This was like very, very well planned and funded. So, they had a series of meetings. The donor ended up cutting a check to Bob. I want to say it was for $20,000 for this project, and that like buys like some level of trust with anybody. When you start forming a donor relationship and you're, collaborating on electoral initiatives. So anyway, the donor came back and was like, well, I have a niece who's really looking to get in politics. She'd like to intern, if anybody who needs this, a spare set of hands around the office. And that's how this woman actually like got in the door into our office.
Wow.
Allison Moss. And so, I had from the outset had a very bad feeling about her. And I said something multiple times to Bob, like Mike and I said something, Mike, my partner, Mike Lutz and I were like, this doesn't feel right. We don't know this person. This is like 2 months out from the election. This is like September of 2016. And, he was like, don't worry about it. You know, this is the daughter of a friend. Oh, it's, you know, Bob's friend. It must be okay, right? But then, like, when she actually came into the office, Mike and I kind of grilled her a little bit, and she was a suspiciously blank slate. And so, you know, I looked for her online. I couldn't find her anywhere. I went to Bob and I was like, hey, you know, who is this woman? Like, we really need to, you know, do a full background check on her or whatever. And he's like, don't worry about it. And so he like shut me down on it. And I was like, okay, you know, it's your intern. He was too trusting in that situation. But you know, it really, because I had that feeling from the outset, because it was like something that it was really psychological warfare. Like, as soon as we found out that it had happened, O'Keefe and his minions, you know, they were allegedly going to drop a different video every day throughout the month of October. And, you know, in that situation, you have no idea. You're like racking your brain about like, what did I say?
Yeah.
You know, could I have said anything that could have been like misinterpreted or cut to like look like I said something else? And so I've likened it to like psychological rape, because it really does feel that way. And I talked to lots of other victims subsequently who expressed the same thing, where they have no idea. They're just kind of like at the mercy of, you know, what is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I launched Project Veritas Exposed. Basically, as soon as we found out, I went into evidence gathering mode and documentation mode, and was able to identify all these different operatives, undercover operatives of James O'Keefe. And so it grew into a website with like 170 profiles of associates of James O'Keefe, a lot of operatives. And they're not necessarily all operatives, because a lot of times you don't have, you know, like the smoking gun to be able to publish that to say this person was an undercover operative.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I did in many instances have smoking guns to be able to say these are undercover operatives. And I actually was able to help organizations in the aftermath of, you know, being infiltrated as to, okay, here's what you do next. And was able to identify moles who are like in some organizations. So like AFT currently has a lawsuit out against one of them. And then like the Abigail Spanberger, her campaign manager, called me like when this undercover operative was in her office.
Yeah.
And I walked her through the entire process of like what to do and how to like come out clean on the other side. And they ended up getting a ton of press on it. Like, she did exactly what I said, and they blew them out of the water.
That's incredible. I really think
we did a counter sting. The original question, I'm sorry, I went through that long sort of context.
The counter sting, yeah.
Counter sting. In January of 2017, because what happened was, an ally of ours, an allied organization, got an email, like a bait email from one of their operatives. Like, they recognized the signature because what had happened with us, and sent it to me. And I was like, oh, that's definitely this. It's got to be the same woman who infiltrated our office, Allison. And I was like, okay, well, let's set up a meeting with her.
I love this so much.
And so We got the meeting set up, and what they wanted to do, they wanted to fund protests of Trump's inauguration. And they were trying to get, we ended up partnering with Ryan Clayton on this. Ryan Clayton was running Wolfpack for a long time. He's a big, getting big money out of politics activist. But anyway, Ryan was posing as the executive director of this organization. And, you know, we set up everything like in this venue, this restaurant where they were meeting up with us. It was her. It was the exact same woman who had infiltrated our office. And so a colleague of mine, Pete, and I were waiting outside the door, because like we weren't going to make this a long term thing. Like, the jig was going to be up as soon as like she walked out the door. But she gets up to walk out, and as soon as she opens the door, I'm standing there. Pete's behind me with a camera. And then we're just like, following her down the street, like shouting questions at her.
I love it. That's amazing. So how many times did they try to sue you? Or how many times did they threaten to sue you, at least?
None. I mean, we sued them and won. So.
Oh, great. So they you mean they never tried to sue you? Because they threatened to sue me back in April of 2021 because I tweeted that O'Keefe's videos were selectively edited. They gave me 2 weeks to delete the tweets, but of course I never did. I didn't want to be another name on his wall of shame, which I'm sure you're probably familiar with from the Project Veritas website. So I didn't cave into that, but I assume that they probably tried to sue you a bunch of times, but they didn't.
I never once got as long as that website's still up. I have a number of people reach out to me to have their profiles taken down, which I refuse to do unless it's like a really compelling case of like, hey, I was only like very marginally involved, like, and this was 10 years ago. I did a, you know, music video with O'Keefe. Please take me off of, you know, like it's, I think I've taken down two profiles over the last, like we launched the website in 2018. So what, almost 6 years. But nobody can. I have been sued by one person, but it was dismissed because everything that I published, like I have a journalism background. I don't publish anything that I don't have verifiable like sources for. Mm-hmm. And so they just can't, you know, if they were to sue me, it would open up discovery on their end.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's kept Project Veritas from suing me directly. It was one of their staffers that sued me, and he was pro se, so you know it wasn't a serious effort, but I did have to you know hire a local counsel. You know, it's annoying,
yeah,
but whatever, you know, I'm not taking it down, fuck you. I'm sorry, pardon my language.
No, that's fine, it's a podcast. It doesn't matter.
It always elicits a strong reaction from me. I'm just I have not much mercy for any of these people. And I'm like, you're the one who decided to be involved with this person who is clearly just totally unethical. And, you know, there are consequences. You if you're going to go out there and destroy people's lives for activism, like these people are civilians. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go undercover, here's some key differences. I'm not like targeting like some low-level staffer on a Senate campaign. You know, what the fuck is that? Like, you're going after people who don't have that much experience, don't have that much experience or knowledge of training.
They're just completely unaccustomed to it.
But they don't have, generally speaking, the knowledge of what's really going on inside of a campaign. So, you know, a lot of the videos that O'Keefe has done, in recent years, it's, you know, he plays in Senate races, you know, key Senate races, will go into an office, a campaign office, and engage staffers. And it's like, very few of these staffers have real access to the candidate. And to try to paint the candidate as like, knowing what, you know, whatever this staffer is saying, or that the staffer has any clue what's really going on, is really disingenuous. But, you know, that the whole operation is built off, like, let's go in and fish and see what we can find. And then, you know, we'll take any salacious thing whatsoever and cut it in a way to make it look nefarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a marker of their methodology is a lot of times to, you know, get people drunk, you know, have the conversations at bars, and then start asking, you know, sort of like contentious questions about candidates, issues, whatever, you know. So
the thing with Veritas wasn't so much, to me at least, the deceptive videos themselves, because it's very clear that they were crafting these videos to make it seem like something was happening that wasn't happening. The terrifying reality to me was that Republicans repeatedly attempted to legislate based on those videos. It'd be like writing laws based on a Jackass video. You know what I mean? that's the dark side of all of this, that the Republicans seized upon James O'Keefe's bullshit and decided to turn that into law.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, Donald Trump actually gave money to Project Veritas in 2015.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about if you look at the topics that O'Keefe was pursuing, and particularly pursuing Bob, and again, it wasn't about Bob. It was, you know, they were made aware of Bob, and he, you know, then it was like, oh, well, he's working for the DNC. He's working for Hillary Clinton. You know, we can paint Hillary Clinton with its corrupt brush by, you know, making it look like whatever Bob is doing is nefarious.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing that when he's being funded by Donald Trump, who is Hillary Clinton's opponent, I mean, that to me is terrifying, that you could, under the guise of journalism, and be taken seriously, mm-hmm. be taken seriously, because it was like Anderson Cooper who was like leading the charge in this story in 2016. You know, it's chilling to me.
Yeah.
You know, have, you know, entire news outlets or news quote unquote news outlets devoted to, you know, going in and ruining like civilian lives, mm-hmm. staffers' lives in pursuit of, you know, electing a presidential candidate.
Well, and they also do that, Lauren, to members of the press. Anyone who writes something negative about Project Veritas, or at least we can refer to them in the past tense now, because bye-bye, Project Veritas. Yeah. But what they do is they intimidate people using defamation lawsuits into taking down what they wrote about Project Veritas. And that happens. That's how they came after me. They've got that, as I said before, they've got that wall of shame. And most of the time, the journalist or publication will capitulate to Project Veritas's legal threat. Are you aware of any grassroots efforts to strengthen anti-SLAPP laws? Maybe not necessarily in response to Project Veritas, but this is something that's becoming more and more prevalent in the political debate, which is that, you know, punishing your political opponent by suing them for defamation. Is there any further efforts to curtail any of that abuse of the legal system?
I mean, I'm not really aware of that, yeah. But, you know, my efforts with the website were to, you know, fight back. It were threefold, you know, really to serve as a hub, like for victims and activists, like for training and identification purposes, but also for like media, for research. You know, I worked with a lot of different publications that were doing stories over the years, the New York Times, The Intercept, a whole host of them, like, broke significant news on, you know, his ties to Eric Prince, for example. Mm-hmm. But, you know, another part of that was, you know, banding together with victims to try to be of service to their attorneys and, you know, making sure that there were legal answers to all the things that they were doing. But, you know, it's odd, I guess. I think they pursue that where they think that there's, you know, they can get away with bullying someone. Mm-hmm. They never pursue that with me. You know, you just have to like tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, defamation is such a high bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're going to, you know, pursue somebody because of a tweet that said that, you know, edited videos. I mean, that's just, and no one's going to actually go to court over that. You know, they might threaten it. Yes. He has fun sending threatening letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm good on you that you saw through the bullshit.
Yeah. And I love the letter. I cherish it. In fact, I have yet to have it framed. I want to frame it and put it up on my wall. But before I let you go, Lauren, just real quick, one of your claims to fame, one of the greatest things you have done with your Sting videos is, of course, the John Eastman videos, which he revealed all kinds of additional details as far as what happened in and around January 6th. Have any of those videos been subpoenaed by prosecutors who are currently making Donald Trump's life hell?
I mean, I haven't received any subpoenas. I imagine that, you know, there's been no subpoena for that because the entirety of the interaction is available on the internet, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
are you aware of them, any of the prosecutors planning to use some of your videos of Eastman?
I haven't been made aware of that, no. Okay.
That's a shame because, boy, he let it spill.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, Lauren, this has been an absolute pleasure. We got to get you back on, and we'll dig more into more of your Sting videos and talk about 2024, absolutely, and see where we're headed next year as democracy remains a cliffhanger in the United States these days. So thank you again for your time.
It does.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Plug away. So we're talking about volunteerblue.org. Is there anything else you want to promote here at the end?
Well, you can check out my reporting at theundercurrent.tv. But, you know, the majority of my stuff, like to be most up to date, would be on Twitter. And my handle is at L.A. Windsor.
Okay, great.
Please volunteer. Turn out. Turn out the vote in Virginia and Ohio.
Thank you again, Lauren. And now you can feel free to leave the airport.
Thank you, Bob. Hope to talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.